Next case is 03-235, the Cleveland Clinic Foundation versus James Lawrence, Tax Commissioner of Ohio, Wilkins. Ms. Keyes-Walker, I don't have you signed in. You're going to argue, are you, Ms. Keyes-Walker? I don't have you signed in. I just wonder, you're going to argue? You're going to argue? Okay. You do need to sign in with our clerk's office before. Not now, but next time. Mr. Farron.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The only issues in this case are jurisdictional issues. There are two jurisdictional issues, the first of which will sound familiar because it's a standing issue, and that is whether the Cleveland Clinic Foundation, as the lessee of the property, had standing to file the application for exemption. The second issue is whether the tax commissioner was precluded from considering the application because of the fact that there were unpaid taxes, assessments, penalties, and interest at the time the application was filed, and in fact remained unpaid at least until the time the tax commissioner issued his final determination in this case. The standing issue is the same basic issue as this court has heard. Under 5715.27, the person who is authorized to file application for exemption is limited to the owner of the property. In this case, the foundation leased the subject property from a for-profit joint venture. The lease term was a 30-year lease term with two 10-year renewal options. The rental amount ran from an initial $10,000 per month prior to the beginning of construction and topped out at a little over $130,000 per month during the last renewal term. The lease did give the foundation the option to purchase the property at the end of the last lease term for 125% of the appraised fair market value. If the foundation did not exercise the option, or if it terminated the lease early, all of the property was required to be surrendered to the for-profit joint venture. Before the board, held that a lessee of property who is responsible under the lease for the payment of taxes is authorized to file an exemption application under 5715.27A. That is directly contrary to the plain language of the statute, which restricts the person to the owner of the property. It doesn't say the lessee of the property. It doesn't say an owner of an equitable interest. It doesn't say the owner of any other interest in the property. It says the owner of the property may apply. Again,
just to pursue this a little further, we heard in the last case that the forms that are submitted to property owners to apply for these exemptions certainly imply, from the way they're worded, that folks other than the owner of the underlying fee can be the applicant. And I think you indicated, perhaps it was opposing counsel on the last one, that apparently the practice in the BTA has been for these to be considered on their merits, and the state's not even been objecting to that.
Two responses, Your Honor. First of all, I believe Justice O'Connor accurately saw that the application is simply seeking information.
Well, that's,
we wouldn't know that information absent the application form.
That's one take on it, but
I would disagree. It implies.
All right. Well, let's get away. The application says what it says. We can spin it whatever way we want to. What about the practice? Has it not been the practice that folks other than the owner of the underlying fee can get these started and that the tax commission and the state is not object to that.
The practice has not been specifically consistent, Your Honor. Most of the board's decisions of recent time have said that a lessee for a term as short as 5 years could file an application.
And as,
in another case, they found that a lessee for 10 years could not.
And has the state been objecting to that?
The state has not followed those decisions and has appealed at least a couple of them. One was mediated, but the state decided to take this case up, particularly after this court's decision in the Victoria Plaza case, which I believe clearly rejects the board's decisions. And in fact, the board's decisions in this case were based on its decision in the BOR valuation cases, where it said a lessee could file a Board of Revision complaint.
Okay,
this court rejected that in Victoria Plaza.
Okay, I'm not trying to quarrel with you about what the statute says. We can all read that, and the statute is pretty direct.
Yes.
But what I am trying to establish is what has been the practice up until today.
The Board of Tax Appeals, the majority of its cases.
All right, I'm not asking about the Board of Tax Appeals. What position has the state taken
The state has not agreed with that position, Your Honor. They may not have appealed every case because some cases, frankly, are very minor
cases.
Has
the state consistently been objecting in the Board of Tax Appeals?
Yes. I can't say consistently. Somebody may have missed the issue. But the position of the tax commissioner has been that it has to be the owner of the property, Your Honor.
For how long?
For as long as I can recall, Your Honor.
All right. That's what I'm trying to establish.
Okay. I'm not saying that for a while they may say, boy, they're deciding these, but once Victoria Plaza came out, we said, well, let's take this one up because it's an analogous provision, and we believe the Victoria Plaza case is directly on point. Interestingly, too, in Victoria Plaza, this court contrasted a provision in 5711.01b, which referred to a taxpayer as a person owning or having a beneficial interest in the property. The court noted that the valuation complaint provision, 571519, did not have such language in it, nor does 571527. It says the owner, and it doesn't embellish at all upon that by indicating anybody else with a beneficial or other interest in the property could qualify to file the application.
What's the worthy purpose that is served by insisting that it cannot be anyone other than the fee owner to file the application?
I can't speak for the General Assembly, Your Honor. They specifically changed the statute to put owner in. I suspect they may have said, well, let's make sure we have the person who owns the property so we know exactly what the property is, we know what the tax liability is.
Like here, we're not dealing with your five-year lease.
That's correct.
We're dealing with an owner, a lessee, that's, for all intents and purposes, an owner who, for some reason, didn't want to do the upfront financing to build this building in their name.
Yes, but this court has addressed situations where there are long-term leases, and the only type of lease that this court has ever found resulted in the lessee becoming the owner of the property is where it's a 99-year lease, renewable forever, or at the very least for two terms. And as that has always had a special position in this state and in most states, it's a special status that has been the only time that a lease holder could essentially be a freehold owner. Early on in the Davis case cited in our brief, the court specifically rejected the idea that a holder of a 10-year lease was the owner of the property. This court has never held that the owner of a lease interest of less than a 99-year term renewable was the owner of the property.
If the owner in a lease like this only got a token amount, $1, $5, or whatever, would your position be different?
It would not be different, Your Honor, as far as who could apply If I own property and say, I'll give it to you for 5 years, a buck, you know, I'm a private owner, give it to me, I'll give it to you for a dollar a year, I still own the property.
Would you allow the use of the property by the lessee to determine the tax consequences? Your position still be the owner is not the user?
Your Honor, that would go to the question whether it was used with a view to profit. And I think they would have a strong argument that if it's just a dollar and that's all, the lessor of the property is not leasing it with a view to profit. It's just it's a token amount. But it wouldn't change the question of who owns that property. The owner of the property would still be the person who would be required to file the application.
But if the owner filed, would the tax commissioner consider evidence of what the lessee's use was?
Yes, I believe they would. I believe they would consider both the use by the lessor and the use by the lessee. And if the use by the lessor was considered to be just a token amount and not really a use with a view to profit, then they would look to the use by the lessee, and if it were within one of the exempt purposes, I believe the exemption would be granted.
So here your position is that because the owner is making profit, you aren't even going to look at the use of the lessee.
Well, we don't even get that far to the merits in this case, right? This case doesn't involve the merits.
I understand.
I would if it went to the merits. If the owner is leasing it for profit, I believe the commissioner would. I would certainly argue that that is a use with a view to profit, and therefore does not qualify under the exemption provision.
So just so I'm understanding their position, if the owner of the property is making a profit, then you are going to totally ignore the use of the property by the lessee.
Well, that's correct, because you have to look at both uses, and if the statutes, most of the exemption statute, this one says, it's not entitled to exemption if it's used with a view to profit. And I think you have to look at both parties to determine that, Your Honor.
Counsel, could you address the second part, the unpaid taxes?
Yes.
Issue. Is there a factual dispute on the timing here?
Apparently there is, because there's no evidence in the record. I'm certainly not aware of any payment of any of the unpaid taxes or assessments even to date. But I don't think it is disputed that at the time the application was filed, there were unpaid taxes and unpaid assessments. At the time the tax commissioner finally issued his final determination, they remained unpaid. There was a statement in the reply brief to the board that they had paid them after that.
The unpaid taxes are for a period in which the clinic foundation was the lessee. Is that correct?
The unpaid taxes and assessments were for 1997. It was
and the lease started.
It was probably after. I don't know if they began using it for an exempt purpose because the building wasn't even constructed yet.
Well, but when did the lease start?
When the lease started, but the statute also requires or also states that the commissioner cannot remit taxes that accrued prior to the acquisition of title. And they didn't acquire title at any time, therefore they couldn't be remitted. Okay. Secondly,
I am not trying to engage you in argument here. I'm trying to establish some facts. When did the lease start?
The lease started, I believe it was
96, didn't it?
96.
And the unpaid taxes are for
97.
97.
On the land. Only on the land.
All right.
There are also unpaid assessments, and as we argued in our brief, the commission doesn't have authority to remit unpaid assessments. They must be paid. And the treasurer's certificate stated they were not paid. They were clearly unpaid at the time of application. They were unpaid at the time of the final determination. There's no evidence that they've been paid since. With respect to the reliance by the foundation on House Bill 493, giving the commissioner more authority, two quick points. First, it still doesn't authorize the commissioner to remit assessments. Those have to be paid. Secondly, a condition they leave out of their quote from the bill is that that's only available if the property owner gets the consent of all of the taxing authorities to whom those taxes are paid. There's no evidence that that has happened in this case. I'd like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. Ms. Keys Walker.
Thank you. May I say you have a lovely new home. May it please the court. And I apologize, I'm a little off kilter today. Let's put this case in a little bit of context. In the Perk case, one of the cases they cite from this court is a 1915 case called Rose Institute versus Myers, which I believe is 92 Ohio State 252. And that case says, when you talk about a charitable exemption for real estate, you're talking about in rem, not in personam. You're talking about something that attaches to the property, not the person. And the reason it talked about that was because in that case, the issue was whether a charitable institution that holds title to property and leases it out to a for-profit entity for that income stream, and then says, well, we use that income for charitable purposes, so the property should be exempt. They said, no, this isn't about an income stream, which is in personam. This is about in rem, the property itself. And that's what the exemption is about. So you have two statutes here, one that talks about how you get the exemption itself when you're entitled to it, which is a property belonging to a charitable institution used exclusively for charitable purposes. And then you have a totally separate statute saying who is the person or entity with standing to make that application, and that's the word owner. You have to interpret the word owner in the context of this statute, in the history of this court's cases that go back as early as 1915, that says what we're talking about is in rem, who uses the property. So the question in this case specifically is, when the legislature amended that statute on standing to clarify who can file and to really separate out the boards of education and other persons wanting to keep the property from getting the exemption from those seeking it. And it used the word owner. Why on earth would the courts suddenly want to change the qualifier and say that means only fee owner and not also equitable owner, when equitable owner is use, occupancy, control, management, everything that has to do with the use of the property and the in rem personality of the property for this particular statute.
Well, it would have been so easy for the General Assembly to have said that, wouldn't it, if that is what the General Assembly intended to adopt. But here we have just the word, the owner of any property may file. I labor on this burden of trying to apply the words as they're written, plain meaning of the words and statutes. I just have a difficult time with all this talk about transactions. That can all be taken care of in the dealings between the owner and the lessee or whoever the equitable owner is. But the General Assembly, for some reason, it seems to me, in 27, decided that it's the owner, the person who actually owns the fee. They're the person. That's the person or the entity that ultimately has the highest interest in the tax status of the property, are they not?
It depends, Your Honor. An owner itself in Black's Law Dictionary doesn't simply say the person whose name is on the deed. It includes equitable owner, and it's, as we learned in first year property, it all depends on that bundle of rights. And that's the analysis that the BTA has used. Have shifted back and forth on what's the proper analysis.
It also depends on duties as well as rights that come with ownership. And the duty,
it also depends on the duties that come with those rights. And the duty here is the payment of taxes, and that clearly attaches to the owner of the property.
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. I think for purposes of this analysis, part of the bundle of rights is who has the obligation to pay the real estate taxes. And in our case, it's the lease. You look to the lease to see what bundle of rights it transfers. and obligations, and one of those obligations is that the clinic has the obligation to pay property taxes.
But that's between the parties to the contract, not between the taxing authority and the owner of the property. They cannot delegate their obligation to pay those taxes.
But it's not just a contract, Your Honor, it's a lease, which means it transfers property interest. So we're not talking about I make a promise with somebody else to pay their taxes. We're talking about one stick in that bundle of a whole lot of property rights being transferred by the lease. So that the leasehold interest itself actually is equitable ownership. It gives you exclusive rights to occupy and exclude other persons. It gives you the right to encumber the property. It gives you the right and obligation to use the property for a charitable purpose. It gives all of the incidents that relate to equitable use, occupancy, and ownership of the property, which is consistent with the entire purpose and structure of these statutes. For example,
Who does the tax bill go to?
Sorry?
Who does the tax bill go to?
The bill goes to the Cleveland Clinic. It is sent to the Cleveland Clinic, they receive it, and they are obligated to pay it under the lease, which is why in their application, the foundation actually listed itself as the title owner and the applicant, because it was transferred that ownership through that bundle of rights in the lease. Now, you got into this a little bit. What would be the consequences of accepting the commissioner's viewpoint? Well, it's easy. Once you get past this initial standing argument and you say, okay, isn't there exemption? The exemption statute says property belonging to a charitable institution. If this court says owner can only mean that person whose name is on the deed, even though they have no rights to that property, cannot encumber it, cannot transfer it to anyone else without involving, then that property doesn't belong to the Cleveland Clinic anymore and cannot, even though it's used for a charitable purpose, cannot be eligible for an exemption. Now, does that make sense that the legislature, in using a word as variable as owner, that does have more than one definition in Black's Legal Dictionary, meant to eliminate a series of cases that go back until 1915, saying that when you have a comparison of two quote-unquote owners and one bundle of rights is much greater than this one, that you must ignore the fact that this bundle of rights qualifies him as owner for purposes of receiving belonging to a tax exemption. It just doesn't make sense. Today's financial real estate development mechanisms have to have some flexibility. And that flexibility is provided for in the law by talking about looking at the whole picture, the whole bundle of rights, not any one.
Counsel, I'm interested in that. It may not help resolve this, but the mechanism used here, that is a private owner to construct what is appears to be, what is this used for anyway, this facility?
The mechanism?
No, the facility. What's the?
Oh, the facility is a satellite of the Cleveland Clinic.
Right.
It's used research, education, outpatient treatment.
I'm assuming the foundation is in the business of handing off sweetheart leases to favored members of the community, but I assume it's a mechanism that probably takes advantage of some federal tax laws for the folks who own the underlying fee, thereby allowing them to put up the building at a lower cost. Is that part of what's going on?
I don't know the exact answer. I can tell Your Honor it is a 501c corporation, nonprofit. I can also tell you that the mission of the Cleveland Clinic is fulfilled by having a location that happens to be a very valuable location. It can provide services for a much broader area than Strongsville residents by being close to the airport, via the interstate in an area accessible to many, many people. Those are expensive locations. But that also is a way that it can fulfill and promote its goal of reaching as many people as possible.
The second issue here, the unpaid taxes, could you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. I would suggest to your court that it is not genuinely a quote-unquote jurisdictional issue, that it is not properly ripe to be decided. What that statute says is unless these taxes and assessments are paid or subject to remission, you cannot consider, in the tax commissioner's opinion, it used the word until these assessments and taxes are paid. They have been paid. There, we have never gotten past this initial who has standing question. Those were the issues that was for the BTA.
So, Counselor, let me be clear on this. The taxes and penalties and assessments have been paid.
Yes, Your Honor.
And they were paid when?
They were paid at, I cannot tell you exactly when because it's not in the record. And I'll tell you
so
it's
that
not
was
in
outside of the time frame that we're concerned about for this this application and the processing of this application and the hearings on this application.
It may have been, it may not have been. I know that there is no amendment. Official amendments saying these matters have now been paid. I know that as of the time that it was on appeal, they had been paid. The statement was made then at the briefs that they had been paid and was not contested by any party. But the issue is, at that point, the case had already been kicked out back at this point saying you don't even have standing. And if you look at the issues that were raised in the appeal, it's the issue is who has standing to get on first base to say whether the county auditor, when he made his certification, was right or wrong. So in the old principle of in status quo ante, that when you reverse and you send back to the point of where the error occurred, and we go back to the point of saying, yes, the foundation has standing to submit this application, and the BTA says go back and consider this, we will go back and we will show, I offer to the court, to the commissioner, here's the evidence, these taxes have been paid. And I would suggest that the issue is not ripe at this point for this court to rule on. All that really needs to be done at this point is to decide the truly jurisdictional issue of who has standing.
Counsel, is there a in, for subsequent years, was once this issue was raised, was another filing made for exemption with the owner of the underlying fee also on the application?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, say that one more time.
I'm sorry. For the subsequent years, once this issue of jurisdiction was raised, has an additional request for exemption with the owner of the underlying fee been filed?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. From all of the fees and assessments and taxes and penalties have been paid from 1996 to date. So that issue will not arise again.
I think the question here that I'm having is, what is the status of post-97 years with regard to exemptions?
I believe the status, Your Honor, is that...
Could you speak into the microphone, please?
Was there a question? Oh.
We can't hear you. You have to speak into the microphone.
My understanding is that the clinic has paid the taxes, et cetera, since 1997.
So they are not exempt, as we speak, for post-97 years.
Right. Once the initial exemption gets determined, then there will be a request for remission for each of the years in which they have been paid.
Could I ask you why Royalton Road Joint Venture did not file a subsequent application and why it was the Cleveland Clinic Foundation that filed the application?
Why didn't?
Well, if I understand it, the fee owner is the Royalton Road Joint Venture. Has that entity ever filed any kind of an application?
No, Your Honor. The lease specifically provides that the foundation will apply for the fee exemption. And you see, we would be put in that.
So in an arrangement between the titled owner and the lessee, the provisions of the lease provide that the lessee, contrary to the statute, should make the application.
Right, because they have the obligation to pay the tax.
And
they get the bill.
And subsequent to this case, for additional tax years, there is no application filed by Royalton Road.
No, Your Honor, because then it would be a charitable, they would be put in the same situation of the Evans case that the state relies on, saying that a private institution cannot seek an exemption for property that they own simply because they're getting income from the property. Kind of a catch-22.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience.
Let me ask you another question, Ms. Keyes-Walker. Mr. Farron relies heavily on the Victoria Plaza case. What's your response to his reference to Victoria Plaza?
His reference to?
The Victoria Plaza case, which we held in a similar statute, that the property owner, the owner, the fee simple owner, had to be the one to file for, it was an exemption, I guess, whatever it was in that case, it was a different issue. But he relies, I didn't see a cite to that case in your brief, I guess, and I'm wondering how we distinguish Victoria Plaza. That's a fairly recent case in which we've held against your argument in this case. Is there a way to distinguish Victoria Plaza?
Well, I think each case has to be decided on its own facts. Each case has to be looked at in terms of remembering the statute that says the property belonging to a charitable institution may be exempted from tax, and each case must be looked at to determine if the charitable institution is the owner, it belongs to the charitable institution in terms of this bundle of rights, which includes anything from length of the lease, occupancy, exclusion, et cetera.
Thank you. Mr. Farron, you saved exactly the same amount of time in this case as you saved in the last case, so take a minute.
You must be psychic, Your Honor. Initially, Justice O'Connor, you were correct. It's the owner's liability, in this case, the limited partnership. The tax duplicate, the owner is listed as the partnership. It's his obligation. The only obligation that the foundation might have for payment would be under the lease agreement. With respect to the payment of the taxes, there's no evidence whatsoever that there was any payment of the taxes and assessments. The first mention of it was in the reply brief to the Board of Tax Appeals, so obviously it wasn't paid with the application or even during the time that the tax commissioner had the application under consideration. Certainly a payment after the commissioner has issued his decision wouldn't comply with the statutory requirement.
But if we rule in their favor and find that an equitable ownership allows them to apply, then doesn't it then go back and now be considered, and then they submit evidence of whether or not those have been
Your
paid?
Your Honor, I would submit they would have to file a new application and have the treasurer issue attach a certificate saying the taxes have been paid. This was an issue in this case. It was an issue in this case, and it's for this case to decide. If this case decides the commissioner did not have jurisdiction, they would have to file a new application for the property. Would be
so. Your position is that issue has to be determined at the filing, the time of the filing, and any subsequent payment during the pendency doesn't cure it.
The statute requires the application to have the treasurer's certificate attached to it that says there are no unpaid taxes or assessments. It's not been decided, and I'm not saying there's anything that would preclude an argument that during the time it's being considered by the commission, you have an application, and prior to the time the commissioner issues a decision, that defect might be able to be resolved by submitting the tax or the treasurer's certificate at that time. But that was not done in this case, either with the application or during the time period that it was being considered by the commissioner, Your Honor.
Counselor, then, under that theory, if there is no certification by the taxing authority to verify the payment of taxes and assessments, even if we would find standing, 1997 is precluded from an exemption, then, for these entities?
Well, that's correct, and the reason for that is that on the second issue, the commissioner would not have had the authority to even consider the application.
Based on the lack of the certification.
That's right.
And then what does that do for then the subsequent years, since they weren't timely filed by the 31st of December?
That's correct. Now, they could file a new application, and they could seek remission
for, what time
for the
period?
Prior 3 years.
Okay, for the
so
prior
they might lose a few years unless the General Assembly puts these grandfather clauses in every once in a while, allowing them to go further than 3 years. But they could file a new application and seek a remission for the earlier years. And Justice Pfeiffer, I just point out in response to a question you had to my opposing counsel, there's no evidence of the use of this property, but certainly under the lease agreement, the foundation does have the right to lease it to for-profit entities such as optical companies and other medical companies. So we don't have an issue here as to the use because that issue was never addressed because of the jurisdictional arguments.
So they could lease it out to a pharmacy or CVS or?
That's correct. And yeah. In fact, in the record, there was some proposed lease to an optical company.
There's no indication that's happened.
There's no evidence at all as to the use because it didn't get to the merits of the case because of the jurisdictional issues.
We're holding you over, but could you address just very quickly the argument that opposing counsel advanced that you have them, in watching these two cases, you're setting up a catch-22 she argues that they intentionally had only the lessee on this application because to do otherwise would put them in the position of bolstering your argument that this is a for-profit operation.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with that. If it's a for-profit operation, everybody should be clearly aware of that, and perhaps that's why they want to make sure the owner is the one who applies.
Well, I think her argument is that in this case, under this lease, factually, the charitable enterprise and the equitable ownership is most of the bundle of sticks.
I would disagree.
As opposed to some other, and that we should look at each one of those individually.
Well, that's the argument, but that equitable ownership argument is the precise argument that was rejected by this court in the Victoria Plaza case that was issued in 1999. There was no question that the person who applied had an equitable ownership. He bought the property, just hadn't had the title changed. And still, the court looked to the statute and says it says owner, and it cited its earlier cases that said, when the term owner is used in reference to property, to land and buildings, the common understanding is that it's the title owner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.